Oh, God, and we're doing your podcast. You know, by the way, Chris Sims Unbuttoned and PFP.
We're rescheduling it for you. It's supposed to be tomorrow, but apparently you've changed your schedule, and now we got to do it today.
Is that a problem for you?
It was, but it doesn't seem to matter. Nobody cares about my life.
Yeah, coming in hot. That's what we're doing here at Central Park. Does it feel weird for you right now? I didn't know I was going to be the one that was going to open this up.
But I didn't even think of it until it started. I'm sitting here, and it occurs to me, this is Chris Sims Unbuttoned. This is your turf, even though it's a joint enterprise.
Right.
Chris Sims Unbuttoned, show 30, PFTPM, show 311.
You got some catching up to do. 311, there. Okay.
You got some catching up to do,
That's
homie.
A good one.
So, yeah, I didn't know. I just figured we'll see who talks.
Okay,
it
good.
It doesn't matter. It's not like being on air. That's
no.
What's great about this.
I know.
Like, when we're on TV, we have to worry about when to start, when to stop, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We can do whatever
no,
we want.
No, you're right. You can do whatever we want.
What's
shit,
up with
cock,
this desk,
balls,
man?
Doesn't matter.
I like the couch.
I know.
Why are we on this desk? Well, I'm going to sit on the couch.
You just said it was my area, and now you want to change it.
Well, why do you
it's
change
my
it?
Area.
Why'd you change it when
because
I'm
I don't feel like sitting in like this crouching position trying to look at notes.
T-Rex? And,
yeah, that's what I feel like every week.
You
I'm
look
leaning
like a
over.
T-Rex.
I got to put
the arms of
the computer there. So how can you say it's my area and my domain, and then you want to change it right away?
Yeah. Did you get approval from the executives to do this?
I mean, apparently, I'm guessing. I think Matt Casey did. Matt Casey's the one that's got to deal with them more than anybody. I think I complained enough about it on the actual podcast that they actually made it happen. So either way.
I never heard you complain about
it. Oh, I did. I did on the. You don't listen to the podcast.
No,
you're a jerk.
I do with you, no.
Thank you very much. But yet you expect me to read Pro Football Talk all day long.
But it's different.
Yeah,
it's different.
Sure.
Because,
it's different.
No, because it's a repository for news and information
right.
that you can get on the go.
Yeah.
This is just more of you talking. I hear you talking 2 hours a day.
No, I give news and info that's never heard anywhere else before except for on Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Thanks, friend. Thank you.
Right.
But
well,
either way, it is Chris Sims Unbuttoned.
And PFTPM.
And PFTPM. I always want to mess that up there. But it's a joint collaboration.
How can you mess it up? It's PFTPM.
I know. I don't know why. It's just too many P's and F's and T's and P's and M's, and it just confuses me sometimes, okay? So we got a few things we're going to hit on, okay? First thing is, I know we're going to do what? My top cornerback. Ranking.
Top 10 corners.
We're going to get into that conversation. Aaron Rodgers was in Game of Thrones last night. We're going to talk
you
about
don't even
that.
Know what Game of Thrones is.
No, I don't. And you know what's even better? I actually watched the whole scene he was in and never saw him. So that must have not been that great of a cameo.
How did you know? How did you? I thought you didn't watch it.
I don't watch it, but I watched last night. Like, I've been watching a little bit here and there.
You know you should start at the beginning.
I know. I'm going to eventually. Thank you, Mom. Okay? I'm going to do that.
It's really not.
But I just,
this is just basic logic.
I tuned in a little. It's such a big phenomenon, okay?
It's the next to the last episode.
Rape,
jump in
pillage,
now.
Murder, rape, pillage, murder. That's
dragons.
All that ever goes down. And dragons blowing smoke and fire. That's all I've ever seen on the show. That was some fight scene, but I didn't see Aaron Rodgers. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, I guess he was on it.
Yeah, apparently.
All right. What else are we doing? We'll talk about that.
I don't know. You're the one with the sheet in front of you.
You don't have the sheet.
No.
You got to get your sheet together.
I know. My sheet's never together.
what people are talking about. Is that the name of the segment?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, it is for
today.
We
don't name segments.
It is for today. What people are talking about.
Okay.
Rookie mini camps this past weekend. Now, they do some the first weekend after the draft. It feels like more of them, the vast majority of them, are that second weekend after the draft, and that this past weekend.
Yep.
You had pointed out the general managers hate that first minicamp
practice.
Well,
it's the most nervous
day.
Well, I've had this conversation with a few people in football, since the draft happened. The GM's most nervous practice and nervous day all year is that first rookie minicamp. Because, of course, you've drafted and you've put all this time and work into these guys and how you value them and how they stack up to against each other. So GMs get nervous that, they're going to run out there on the first day and they're going to go, damn, our fourth rounder looks better than the number 10 pick in the draft. And that's where they get nervous because nobody wants to see that. Of course, if you use the 10th pick in the draft, that's such a special spot to be picking or whatever it may be. Nobody wants somebody that, everybody passed up six times along the way to be better than the guy that you had the pick of the litter to get. So I think it's come up with one or two people that I know in the front office, and I do think it's an interesting little tidbit.
Doesn't that just underscore how inexact the science
is?
That they would have doubt.
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to have doubt at this point. You've been studying film. You've gone to practice. You've talked to people. They've come to the Underwear Olympics. You've gone to the Pro Day workout. You've talked to them. You've screened them. You've watched film.
Yeah.
You know what kind of player they are. And then you're still worried that when it's time to put them on a practice field with other rookies, not even the veterans, you're worried that the fourth-round pick's going to look better than the first round pick.
No, I mean, hey, Mike, you're right. It's an inexact science. I mean, yeah, I always say if Bill Belichick can mess up draft picks, and certainly I can mess up evaluating players for draft shows or whatever it may be. But, yeah, it's not always perfect. And there's so many other things that go into evaluating football players to where even the most skilled eye and trained eye of evaluating talents and what players can bring to the field, they can miss certain things because of a guy being in a bad situation at college or having bad coaching or not understanding what he's supposed to do, or maybe you as the evaluator don't understand what that player's supposed to do. So there's a lot of things that go into that, and that's why you see busts in the first round so often.
One of the things I pointed out on Friday when you were asleep and Big Cat and I were doing the show,
right,
the rookie mini camp is something that needs to go away.
Yeah.
You have players who haven't practiced or played football in months. Mm-hmm. They get thrust right into it. I had a GM tell me last week, our veterans are here for phase one and phase two before they get to phase three. We throw these guys right into phase three.
Right.
They're not in shape. They're not ready to go, and you may get a guy injured. So there's some nervousness there. And Adam Gase, the coach of the Jets, one of the few that just doesn't do it. I think
you said
Bill Belichick doesn't do it either. Just do an orientation.
Yeah.
Why make them feel inadequate?
Smart.
Why put them at risk?
Right.
Why throw them to the wolves? I remember when the late Joe McKnight was a rookie with the Jets coming out of the USC, and he's thrown up all over the place because he's not in shape.
Right.
And they throw you into it, and they expect you to act like it's the middle of August.
No, I read your article when I woke up on Friday morning. And
afternoon.
Yeah, and you were it's spot on. I mean, I agree with you. You know, I think the big thing is, so here's the first thing. As a player at that part, it's the first time all year that you get a little bit of a break, right? You go from the college football, you play in your bowl game, and then it's, oh, I might have to go play in the senior bowl, or let's say one of the other bowls that, you know, the kids who just get out of college can go play in. You got that. Then it's train for the combine. Then the combine's over, and it's, hey, you got your pro day in 3 or 4 weeks. Get ready for your pro day. Okay, now the pro day is over. You got to go visit a few teams and do some extra personal workouts. So usually leading up to the draft, the 2 or 3 weeks before the draft, the players have done nothing. They've actually, it's the first time all year they're going, I can take a break and deep breath. So to what you're saying, it is. It's ludicrous. It tells you how psycho coaches are, because they look at these players and they go, my new toy. It's like, that's what it is. That's how I felt like with Gruden every time. And we got like Joey Galloway. I've said this before. He was like his new toy. He couldn't help it. We sent him deep every play in practice. 80 yards, 80 yards, 80 yards, 80 yards. Until what? Joey Galloway got a tight groin one day. And it was like, okay, let's chill out. We know Joey Galloway can run a post. And to what you're saying, yeah, it just does not make sense to throw guys out there who are in a different environment. They're learning things, so they're swimming mentally, right? They're trying to impress physically. And I think that's why you get the Dante Fowler-type incidents, right, every now and then.
Torn ACL, first minicamp practice.
First minicamp.
With the Jacksonville Jaguars, third overall pick, gone for the year.
Right. What did you have to see? Like, to what you just said a few minutes ago, you've done all this evaluating, and you've seen the player in person 55 times, and you've worked him out, and you've talked to his trainers. Why did it matter that on April 17th you had to see the guy come off the edge at full speed? For what reason? It doesn't make sense. New England, who sets the standard in just about everything in the NFL, they would have guys out. They do drills. They don't make it a whole like, oh, we're going to compete and you got to stop this receiver one-on-one. That's where New England's always light years ahead. You know, another thing, just why we're on the subject, with injuries, New England's light years ahead. Most teams, like player gets hurt, ooh, he's practicing this week. He's ready to play. Throw him out there in the game. Oh, he got hurt again. Well, yeah, he's ran around practice for 2 days. New England, well, they're an advanced algebra, while the rest of the NFL is still doing, like, multiplication. The years I was there, like Gronkowski, I can't remember what he was dealing with the year I was there.
It was the arm. It was
might
trying
have been
to
the
come
arm.
Back from the arm. Because they didn't put him on the physically unable to perform list
right
at the start of the season. They moved him to the active roster because they thought he'd be ready to go before week six. And
right
every week there were grumblings. Oh, he looks great in practice. Is it his
exactly
call or is it the coach's call?
It was the coach's call, because you're exactly right. That's what was going on. It was, ooh, Gronk looks pretty good this week. I wonder if they'll play him in there, put him in there. Nope, Belichick's going to wait another week. Wants him to get a little better shape. Wants him to get used to the movements again and get used to what's the point of rushing him, you know, for September or October football. The main goal is to have your team ready to go and fully healthy for November, December rush. So I think it's a lot of times where coaches let their emotions get the best of them with these new toys and get it going a little too fast.
Some of the new toys that were out on the practice field this weekend, we'll talk about a few of these guys. Let's start with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury.
I'm looking at
Kingsbury. Yeah, I did. I actually did. I'm thinking Kingsbury. Who's Kingsbury? Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and Kyler Murray, the quarterback of the Cardinals. I expect guys to look good in this. If you don't look good in this setting, you've got a major problem. It's like not looking good at your pro day workout.
Right.
And I just think the main thing you're trying to do, get the guys comfortable, help them not get injured. I saw that he was concerned that his feet were sore. I mean,
right.
I don't know what we really take out of this. And, of course, the coaches are going to talk the guy up.
Yeah.
Is any coach going to go to the press after practice and say, oh, this guy fucking sucks?
No, exactly not. No. This is the bright spot of the organization.
But it's funny. We still report breathlessly like it's 100% accurate.
Coach said that their first round pick was the first pick of the draft.
No regrets.
You're right. It's going to be all positive propaganda. It definitely is. Yeah, we heard about the feet thing. When you are back in cleats for the first time in a while, hey, that is a real thing. Especially, you know, too. What I always used to make the mistake is I get like too small of cleats, and then because they feel lighter, I feel faster. But yeah, my feet didn't fit in them. So then I'd have to go, okay, let me get something realistic for me that works for me, and let me not try to shove my foot in some like cleat that receivers should be wearing or somebody like that. But hey, yeah, I don't expect anything different from Murray as far as hearing anything different from that standpoint. I do think he's a phenomenal talent. Like you said, it's a setting that's going to be conducive to him anyways. There's no pass rush. They can't hit him. That's the one thing we worry about, right? And you know, the other thing, too, people forget he's been in this system. It's not going to be much of a learning curve. What the hell was his coach? Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma, you know, he came from that same school that Cliff Kingsbury did. So I would think a lot of the language and rules are going to be very similar.
And I think one of the goals is you want this guy to emerge from the weekend having self-confidence in himself.
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
You want him to feel good about what he did.
Yep.
You want him to just emerge, just a sense, I can do this.
Build.
I belong here.
Right.
It's exactly what I thought it was going to be. This is easy. This
is
fun. I'm happy. And then you keep working your way
toward. You maybe script for success on these things, right? Where in practice, you know, the coach might tell the Kingsbury might tell the defensive coach, run this coverage. And then he's going to call the perfect play to kill that coverage. But it's going to build some confidence in the young guys. Like you're saying, Kyler Murray's going to go, oh, I just threw a 25-yard completion right down the middle of the defense. Even though the coach set it up, nobody else is going to know that. Kyler Murray's not going to know that. But it does build the confidence.
We expect Kyler Murray to be the starter week one for the Arizona Cardinals, even though it's been a little bit of mixed signals from the head coach and the GM. He'll be the starter. We didn't know what to expect with Washington.
Yeah.
And quarterback Dwayne Haskins taken 15th overall. Haskins told me before the draft, I'm fine with whatever. If I play right away, fine. If I sit for a year, fine. I'm fine with whatever. Jay Gruden, and, you know, here's the thing, you know, the same thing. Oh, this guy's great. This guy's great. Everything's great.
Yeah.
Open competition. He may
right.
play. But, you know, in his case, I mean, what are you hearing about whether or not Washington really is blown away by this.
I heard a few things really right before the podcast, as I told you a little bit.
That's why I'm trying to say.
Well, I'm pulling
smoother
back the
than
curtain.
That.
It's okay.
So you don't slam the brakes on the show.
It's okay. I'm just because I did. I made.
You're talking in that microphone like it's real.
I know, and I like doing it too. That's just I even realized. I know it's not real, and I mean,
it's a real microphone. It's just not plugged in.
But either way, what I did, I heard this because I wanted to make a few phone calls, and some of these things I try to let coaches kind of be by themselves this time of the year because they're just starting back with practices and OTAs. So I don't.
That is the most positive
friends.
Way I've ever heard anyone say they don't want to mess around with me. So I know not to waste their time.
Well, yeah, maybe that too. I realize I might not get callbacks. They're legit busy for the first time off season instead of their fake busyness that they try to act like all off season. So yeah, I try to stay out of their way for now. Okay, but the one thing I heard Dwayne Haskins was extremely impressive. I heard that Jay Gruden was a little bit taken aback by how awesome Dwayne Haskins looked in person as far as some of the throws he made and just the quality of the football.
Sounds like he's not the only Gruden brother who doesn't watch film of his rookie quarterback.
Well, you know, I would think that Dwayne Haskins, and we heard a lot of these rumblings right before the draft, that the Redskins coaching staff preferred Daniel Jones. And I think there's some realness to that, those rumors, from everything I know that is real. And that Dan Snyder and other people in the front office favored Dwayne Haskins. So, you know, either way, I think Dwayne Haskins impressed Jay Gruden. And like Haskins is not the type of guy that usually Jay Gruden likes. He doesn't like the big, strong strong arm, pocket passing type quarterback. It's not been in John's DNA or Jay's DNA when you look at the quarterbacks they've had around them for the most part. They always kind of prefer the smaller guy, a little more athletic, whatever it may be. I don't know what those reasons are, but I know that Dwayne Haskins is going to be able to run certain plays in that offense that, you know, Case Keenum, Alex Smith, Colt McCoy are not going to be able to run because of his big arm. And some of the things we talked about on the show today, yeah, he might not be a great athlete, but he's got quick feet and he moves around and he's got good size. So I think they were a little more impressed with him than I think they thought they were going to be.
I'd love to know the thought process that a Daniel Snyder goes through to decide he likes Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones. Like, there's already a Daniel in the organization. There can't be another one. I mean, what basis would he have?
I feel like it's got to be evaluate. The Doug Williams factor. And I have no knowledge of this, but Doug Williams, who I know is a guy that's got a great eye for special throwers. I'm not saying all I know is me and him have had a lot of constructive conversations about guys who can throw the ball. He could really throw the ball. And I just feel like he probably looked at Dwayne Haskins and probably saw himself a little bit. And I mean, look at this big guy and the way he can throw the ball all over the field, to where I would be shocked if he didn't maybe get in Daniel Snyder's ear at some point through this process and maybe help the love affair along through Daniel Snyder's eyes a little bit.
Did I ever tell you my favorite Doug Williams story? And I wish I'd said it to him when we ran into him in Arizona. Did I ever tell you the story?
No.
When I was a kid, and we'd go to the sand lot and play football every day after school, he had that throw in one of those games
on
late 70s on his butt. So
right.
All day long, we're trying to make this throw from our ass.
Right.
Just because he did that.
Yeah.
Because I thought of that during the season when we saw the things Patrick Mahomes could do, and it occurred to me there's going to be a generation of kids that at least try to play like Patrick
Mahomes.
Yeah,
sure.
And there will be a certain percentage of them that have the skill to pull it off. So
right.
15 years from now, you're going to have guys looking this way, throwing that
definitely.
Way, doing all this funky stuff, and introduces
sidearm.
A whole new. But anyway,
that is an
unplanned digression.
No, that's fine. That's cool. But to further just what you're saying for how gifted Doug Williams was, because I think a lot of people look at him and just go, oh, well, he only had like a 3 or 4 year career and he won a Super Bowl. Whoop-de-doo. You know, first of all, he was a big-time talent. My dad has said before, I know publicly, that Doug Williams is one of the greatest throwers he ever saw in person. I mean, my dad's put him in the class of like Elway, Dan Marino type thrower. You know, I'm not saying the quarterback part of it, but there's some special attributes about his game for sure.
He won a Super Bowl at a time when if you fell behind by 10 points, you were done.
Yeah, you were done, right.
And they were down 10-0 after a quarter, and they exploded in the second quarter. To hold it together after that kind of a start in an era where for 15 years it was like that.
It was Super Bowl
blowouts.
10-point
lead, it's over.
Right.
They just fall apart. Too much pressure, they just fall apart. And he was the first one who didn't fall apart. All right, so do you think Haskins starts week one based on what you hear?
I feel like he has more of a chance than I thought, or maybe that I gave him credit for. I'm going to say the same thing that I've even said to you. Haskins is what's going to be really phenomenal there. It's the first day he gets, you know, I think I said this in the show last week. When he gets on the field for the first time next to the other quarterbacks, the players see his size and see the way the ball pops out of his hands. He's going to open up eyes in that organization to where there's going to be a clamoring for him. I'm going to still say Case Keenum starts day one, but I think Dwayne Haskins is going to make it very interesting and probably put him on a short leash.
If it's clear that the locker room wants Haskins,
then
that
just
makes
go
it harder.
It.
The question is, you know, we have to factor in dysfunction.
Yeah.
Washington may not listen to the locker room and do what they want to do.
Yeah, right.
All right, Drew Lock.
Yeah.
He's going to watch Joe Flacco get the first team OTA reps. I think what they're doing in Denver is it's Flacco's job to get injured and eventually to lose.
Right.
That they're not going to bench him for performance. It just at some point they know he's not going to be able to play, and that's going to be the opportunity for Drew Lock. I just feel like that's the way this year plays out. And maybe Flacco can play the whole year. But I think if Lock plays this year, it's going to be because Flacco's injured. And if he plays well, then it becomes a de facto benching like we saw last year with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, well, if that was the case, he could be in trouble. I guess I look at this situation a little different just because Flacco, they traded for him. They're on the hook for him for $18 million. I think they'll give him more of a chance to succeed maybe than a Case Keenum would in Washington. Plus, Flacco has won a Super Bowl, been in a number of big-time playoff games, really been awesome and playoff big-time football throughout his career. So I think he gives the organization and the offense a confidence from a guy who go, okay, this guy's been there, he's done that. Drew Lock, a phenomenal talent. You know, I loved him. You know, I think the big knock on him was that, you know, there was a few things in his game just as far as technique aspects and little things that he needs to brush up on that scared people, I think, out of Missouri. So this is a good opportunity. But I mean, again, I think Flacco will be the starter here, and I think he will continue to be the starter unless just the things totally fall apart in Denver. But offensive line's better. Emmanuel Sanders, that's going to be a big question for that offense to see where that goes. And their defense is good, so the quarterback doesn't have to save the day in Denver.
One thing to keep in mind about Drew Lock, he had three different offensive systems in 3 years at Missouri.
Yeah.
He learned a new system every year.
Right.
And I think that is a factor, a positive factor, as he learns another system. And it was more of a pro-style system as last year, so maybe that helps the transition a little bit more easily than it otherwise would have been. But I think they're going to have him ready in the event they need him due to health.
Right.
And other than that, we're going to see Flacco all year long.
And they made him third string, right, to start, which is, like, I know, like, some people go, oh, I mean, gosh, they made him third string off the bat. That's not
– who's second string there?
It's the Kevin Hogan kid they signed.
Oh, my God.
Right. But this is what the teams do.
You work your way up.
Earn it.
You build confidence.
Right.
And the message to everyone is he's not being given it.
Exactly right. The rest of the team goes, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he did
that. Where were you on the depth chart?
Three. I mean, until
– and then you were six?
Gosh, I was three – I mean, even in year two, when I had clearly become kind of number two, Gruden would still make me be three some days just to, like, go, like, hey, nothing's given to you. You got to still keep staying on your A game.
Were you the emergency guy? Was that the rule then? The 46th man was the third-string quarterback who couldn't enter the game before the fourth quarter, and if he did, the other quarterbacks couldn't come back?
My first year of my career, yes, I was that guy. And then year two, you know, I don't even know if that rule was in place quite yet. It was early on in my career when it got changed.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of, like, my first two or three years if that was still the rule.
At some point, they just went to a straight 46-man roster.
Yes.
But I can remember there was a time where you had that third – you could have 46 guys, but only if the third guy was a quarterback who was an emergency quarterback only.
Yeah, I feel like that was, like, year four or five of my career when that rule got changed. So early on, I think all three guys could be dressed and you could play at any point, depending on who got asked to be in. But, yeah, that first year, second year even in preseason football, I know Gruden 1 year, we went back to Houston. My second year, I was the backup all training camp. The first two or three preseason games, I was the backup. Then I went back to Texas, and it was Houston. And I think Gruden wanted to, like, check my ego at the door maybe one more time. And he made me go in with the third group. He wanted to see how I was going to do because I was going to be pissed off that I was around my Texas, you know, Hook'em Horns alumni in it, and I'm going in third. I think he wanted to see if I pouted, if I let it affect my play on the field. It didn't. I played really good, and I still was the backup.
Quinnen Williams, we had some fun with him on the show today. His enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen to it, and then we'll react to it on the other side. Here's Quinnen Williams talking to the media over the weekend.
First walked in, I'm like, man, it's Leonard Williams. Like, he a beast. He from USC. I should give props when props do, basically. But, yeah, I was being a little fan, and we just worked out together and stuff like that. When I get to meet people, I'd be like, man, that's dope. Like, I met Le'Veon Bell yesterday, and I'm like, whoa, like, this Le'Veon Bell, like, the number one running back in the NFL. Like, it's just crazy. So, But I know I'm one of the people too, though. So it's like, but I don't really look at it like that, though. So, like, I met Sam Darnold. That's crazy. Like, bro, you Sam Darnold, Jamal Adams. I'm like, bro, I got Jamal Adams on my ultimate team. So it's like, that's crazy.
Okay, so Quinnen Williams has a great personality.
He does.
Big smile. He's just happy to be here. You interviewed him before the draft.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of a clip that I saw making the rounds on Twitter within the past couple of weeks. It's Pat Summerall and John Madden doing a game in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
Talking about that Burt Reynolds was in a box.
Right.
And Pat Summerall was asked by John Madden what kind of a player was Burt Reynolds in college because he played at Florida State.
Yeah, sure.
And Summerall said, well, he was a really nice guy, had a great personality. And that told Madden everything he knew. He said, yeah, you don't want to hear about a defensive back. He's a nice guy. You don't want a guy like that to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
And he talked about Charles Haley, like, right. Yeah, that guy's – there's a guy who's not a nice guy. And, of course, we didn't know half the stories. We didn't know a tenth of the stories about Charles Haley publicly at the time. But I look at Quinnen Williams.
Have you heard the story of Charles Haley?
I've heard every story that we cannot talk about
here. Well, we can talk about it.
I don't know that I want to talk about Charles Haley disrobing and dropping things on people's shoulders and –
Oh, okay. Well,
is that the story you're going
to
talk?
No, the story so you know he wanted to be traded to the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
The thing I had always been told, before we go back on to Quinnen Williams, I think we got to do this because this is just raw in my brain. He was trying to beg the 49ers, trade me to the Dallas Cowboys, and he started to get frustrated with it. The story I was always told is finally when he hit his limit, he walked into George Seifert's office, he stepped on top of his desk and stood on the desk, and he took a crap on his desk and said, trade me or I'll be back tomorrow. And apparently that's what kind of got the thing going. But he took a number two on George Seifert's desk, and that's what made the trade happen. That was literally when they were like, okay, this is going to be an issue for real. And that was the story I was always told. And I never had anybody debunk me, and I've actually told this story publicly before.
I wonder what your next day would be. Like, if on day one you go straight to the top of the desk and poop on the desk, maybe. Like, if you're going to come back tomorrow, what's next?
I think you do it. Maybe add a little pee on top, maybe?
Well, listen, you need to read Boys Will Be Boys.
I know of
Jeff Perlman's book.
Right?
Yeah. There's a chapter on Charles Haley. And let's just leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
What book? When was the last time you sat down and read a book?
I've only read one book, and I won't be reading Boys Will Be Boys. JFK and the Unspeakable. Why he died and why it mattered. Yes, it's a great book.
There's a lot more JFK books out there.
I know. Well, this one was very well documented about a professor who had sued the U.S. government for lack of information. They send them all the information on the JFK assassination. But what they basically do is they try to drown you in information. So you have to decipher and go through it. They might send you 100,000 pages of something that really the whole report is 1,000 pages, but you have to figure it out where it is in the 100,000.
Yeah, it's called practicing law.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, it wasn't for me. It was a great read. I am a little obsessed with that subject in general. What is the book you said you're reading right now about the mafia?
Five families. Yeah.
I might do that. See, those are the kind of books I want to read. History, fact-based stuff. I enjoy that.
I would start with, if you like the movie Goodfellas, I would read Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi. That was the movie. That was the book on which the movie was based. I never read quickly.
Yeah.
To the point, you know, it's like, oh, they say, oh, you can't put it down. Trust me, I can put it down. I get bored with it quickly, but I'll come back to
right.
it. That was one where I was flying through it, and it's like, I'm going to regret this. I'm reading it too fast.
Who killed JFK? What do you think?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, give me your.
The mob.
The mob. You think the mob did it?
The mob hated him.
No. Yeah, I know they did. They helped him get elected.
His dad was implicated in something that was going on with, like, in Prohibition.
Well, his dad was into Prohibition. He was a bootlegger. And then they got, you know, one of the Chicago mafia to get dead people that were dead voted.
Yeah.
To help him win the area or the city. There was
some irregularity in West Virginia too in 1960.
Quentin Williams.
There's a whole library on global warming. I'm surprised you haven't read any of those.
I read a lot. I read the reports, whether it's from
books.
No,
books.
Well, I don't need. I can read reports. You want to go off on global warming right now?
Let's get back to Quentin Williams. Okay. Here's my question about Quentin Williams as it relates to a guy like Charles Haley.
Yeah.
Right. Is Quentin Williams too nice?
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to be a killer when he needs to be?
Right. Okay. It's a good question because defensive tackles usually are not like that. I think that's why he gets, first of all, people like him because defensive tackles they're famous for being ornery a little bit where, they're edgy. You know, the defensive tackles in the locker room, the guys like you want to mess around with and have fun.
Ornery?
Ornery, isn't that like?
Ornery?
Ornery, that's the word
ornery?
I was looking for, right. You know what I meant.
Like Henry?
Hangry? I felt like I ornery? Had hangry from ornery? Snickers. He's angry and hungry at the same time. But I don't think niceness matters. As far as like, no, you can turn a switch on and become a different guy when it's football, you know, when it's time to play football. I'll go back to like a guy like Brian Dawkins. Brian Dawkins, who I played with, Wolverine, right? 6 days of the week, it was, you know, bless you and this and that. And he was soft-spoken and he barely talked. Hey, Chris, great job today at practice. And all of a sudden, you walk around, you come in the locker room on Sunday, and all of a sudden he's going, what? It's game day! And he's rolling around like Wolverine. And you're like, what the hell? This is the guy I was with all week? Who the hell is this guy? And it was like his alter ego. Here was Wolverine. I'm ready to play football. So guys do have that ability to kind of turn and turn that off. Quentin Williams, it is rare to see a guy that plays that position to be that affable, I guess, is why it kind of gets us.
Well, it's almost like, and I'm trying to project this forward, will there be guys in the locker room who mess with him? Because he's just, it's almost, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but it's almost kind of a dopey, like naive.
Yeah.
Like, and they're
Stay
messing with him and he just
man,
keeps laughing. Like, he
I
just keeps
him.
Laughing.
Yeah.
At what point does he, like, turn and just pick somebody up and throw him across the room?
Well, it will be that if he continues to get tested, that will be the point. Or he's going to toss and throw people across the room on the football field so much, they're going to go, you know what? I'm not going to mess with him in the locker room. I've seen what he's done to everybody on the field. He's certainly capable of doing that to me in the locker room. But if the locker room, if the play on the field shows you're a little soft, yeah, that could lead into guys now taking their chances in the locker room, and now all of a sudden you realize you're being made fun of, and now you're soft, and that's where, like, you know, the Miami thing with Jonathan Martin, and I know that's an unfortunate incident, but that's what happens. That's what snowballs. When you let those inklings go, and guys in the locker room can see they can pick on you and continue to needle you, nothing will happen, you're going to get picked apart.
You know what's amazing? That'll be 6 years ago.
That's crazy.
6 years ago.
Damn.
In October.
Life's flying.
Devin Bush, drafted by the Steelers, they moved up to number 10. They want leadership defensively. And one of the reports that came out this weekend from the Steelers rookie minicamp was that we're already seeing some of that from Bush. He's taking over on the field. Can we glean anything from that? I mean, does this mean he's going to be a natural leader just because he's leading when other rookies are there? Because the real test is going to be when you've got Cameron Hayward and all of the other entrenched, established Steelers players. T.J. Watt, is he going to listen to this guy? Is he going to, you know, where's that dance?
Right.
Like, you're a rookie and you walk in and you're going to try to take over and lead. And, you know, they're going to throw you in a locker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be he can be a little more forceful with his leadership with a bunch of rookies around, definitely. And, yeah, you can glean something into that to know, okay, gosh, this guy's a vocal leader. He's not afraid to, you know, move people around or get them in the right position. He's not just going to sit back and, you know, just be some quiet guy who, oh, I hope it works out. So, yeah, there's certain things there that you certainly can glean that. Now, he'll have to adjust that when some of the names come into town like you talked about. You know, Stephon Tuitt, Cam Hayward, you know, T.J. Watt. Yeah, he might not maybe bark around at them as much, but I think what it does is shows, you know, you always hear the phrase with middle linebackers, like, he's the quarterback of the defense. And man, there's not a defense that's more real with than Pittsburgh, the Blitzburg defense. They have so many checks and things they do at the line of scrimmage to kind of change what they do on the defensive side of the ball, that you need a guy that's smart and able to bark orders, and he certainly seems like that kind of guy. And I would think that I would hope that they already knew he was that type of guy when you trade up 10 spots in the first round to go get him.
All right. We'll see what he does. I mean, they traded up to get Troy Polamalu, and it worked.
Yeah.
And I just have a feeling he's going to be one of these guys who becomes a cornerstone Steeler.
I'm with you.
You know, they
looks
rarely,
like it.
They, when they go all in like that, they rarely get it wrong defensively.
Right.
Offensively, who knows?
Yeah.
Defensively, they rarely screw up with
it. I like your PFT Nike zip-up.
This is an old school prototype that we were looking at one point to maybe like mass produce. It's got a giant logo on the back. I want to peel that off.
Oh,
I hate
okay.
that. That thing's too big.
It's not that bad. I like it.
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I wore it for you. I got out of the blazer. I knew you were going to bust my balls about the blazer.
You knew I was going to. I was hoping you were going to stay in the blazer so I could
wait. I specifically brought this so you couldn't bust my balls about the blazer.
Good.
The blazer is for the TV studio. The zip up is for out here. Not on your couch.
But you don't wear a blazer when you're at home when we do the show, but yet for some reason in this studio you have to. Why?
Maybe I'll start wearing a blazer at home. I don't know. I just feel like here I need to.
All right. And then out of 5 days a week of doing the show at home, how many days a week are you not wearing pants behind?
Three.
Three?
Yeah.
You're wearing just shorts?
It's always shorts.
Okay.
I never.
You're not like in boxer briefs
No. I have shorts on. I'm not up there in my underwear.
Okay.
I always have shorts on. Every once in a while, like, I'll wear the long black, like, you know, they're basically shorts that aren't shorts.
Yeah.
You know, like bed, like you sleep in them or something. They're like sweatpants.
Yeah,
like today's
Like,
I'd never wear them out of the house, you know, but I wear them around the house.
Right.
Do they make the old school gray sweatpants? Do they? Well, I haven't.
Yeah,
had
they do.
Years.
I know what you mean. Like,
maybe I should get some.
Yes. Like, I got you. That's a bet we're going to do one day.
What?
One day we're going to find something I want to bet, and then I can make you stand up on
I've
the show.
I've done it before. It's been done.
So we can just see it. Okay. I haven't seen it.
And the other thing, too, is I don't like to be warm. As you know from the studio back there, I want to be cold during the show.
Right, thank you very much.
All right, hang on.
Circuit.
Wait, no, I got to do something else first. Don't take a chance of being stranded. You know why?
Why?
Your battery could be dead.
Mm.
You need to stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and get your battery tested. It's free of charge and one of the many services available. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your car is a battery.
My car is a battery. Yes. So yes, I hope they could fix that too.
That's how you balance out all the red meat that you eat.
you're funny.
You're Captain Planet, but you still eat cow.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't say I was perfect. I did not say I was perfect.
What did you say? You're 40% vegan.
66%. 66%. But all I'm trying to do is gain, you know, get awareness out there, and that's all I'm trying to do. I still have a steak like twice a week, I would say. I have red meat 2 to 3 times a week. And, man, do I enjoy it.
This is a great time of year, too. Do you grill, right?
Yeah.
You got a nice grill at your new house?
You do, yeah.
When are you moving into your new house?
3 weeks.
When are you inviting me over to your new house?
3 years.
All right. Xavier Howard, 6 years. He's under contract with the Miami Dolphins. And one of the, here's one of my pet peeves. And, and this here's a teaser for what we're going to have on airing of grievances on Wednesday on PFT Live. People in the industry who do what I do, who report news, they will take what is told to them because it's part of the quid pro quo. If you want to be first, sometimes you got to spread the bullshit.
Right.
And, okay, oh, Xavier Howard has a new contract with the Miami Dolphins. He's the highest paid cornerback in NFL history. And that's based on a very specific calculation where you only look at the new years on the contract and you ignore what he already was due to make on the year or years that he still had left.
Right.
In Howard's case, he had 1 year left at $1.285 million.
Right.
When you factor that into his contract, his new contract, he's not the highest paid cornerback in football. He's south of $13 million a year. Josh Norman signed 3 years ago a contract from scratch worth $15 million a year.
Yeah.
No one's beaten that since then.
Right.
And that's one of the things that's amazing to me is we've gone 3 years. The salary cap keeps going up $10 million plus a year.
Yeah.
And no one has surpassed Josh Norman's $15 million a year. They tried to make it look like. And that's,
right.
They'll report it breathlessly. Oh, the highest paid defensive, best, whatever. And it's like there's no questions asked. No scratching of the surface, no attempt to analyze it and explain what it really is. Yeah, if you look at the new money analysis that the agents like to do because it makes the deals look better, it's more than Josh Norman. But the reality is he signed for – Chris, who would sign for 6 years in this climate where the CBA is going to drive the salary cap up, TV deal is going to drive the salary cap up, there's more gambling money. So anyway, rant over. But
no, but I get your point.
It's a good deal.
Yes.
But it drives me crazy when they try to make it look better than it is.
Right.
Say it's a good deal. The guy's had a lot of injuries. This is money he can't say no to.
Yep, right.
You know, that's why he chose to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, to your point, like what you're saying here, I mean, you know, basically the deal is a 3 year, $39 million deal over the next
from
3 years.
From the standpoint of what he's practically going to make.
Yeah.
And then, but see, the thing here's the thing. It's 39 over 3, but if they choose to keep him year to year after that, when the market has changed, when the salary cap's gone up dramatically, he's going to say, man, I'm getting screwed here. Years 4, 5, and 6, I'd have rather done a 3-year, $39 million deal.
Yes.
And then been a free agent.
Yeah. So. No, I hear you. He's going to he took what he can get. He's a second-round pick out of Baylor. Either way, I will say this.
You know what you can do? Here's what you can do.
Yeah.
You can say, I'm going to go get an insurance policy to cover me. I'm going to get through this year, and then I'm going to be a free agent.
Right.
And the franchise tag $16 million this year. It'll be $17 million next year, and he's averaging less than $13 million on a six-year deal.
Right.
Do the Kirk Cousins, Trumaine Johnson thing. Trumaine Johnson said, I'm not signing a long-term contract.
Yeah.
I'm playing out. And he got 2 years of the franchise tag and then made almost as much as Josh Norman on a long-term deal.
No,
do
I
that.
Know.
I mean,
I know.
Bet on yourself. These guys are so – it's amazing. These guys are so confident, confident to the point of delusion with their abilities. But when that money's on the table, they blink so fast.
Well, when you – you know, a lot of these guys' cases, when you've never had money and somebody dangles out, you know, here's $39 million guaranteed for you, it's hard to say no to that. You know, Trumaine Johnson, he rolled the dice. He got lucky, certainly, and good for him. I'm all for that. But I just think in a lot of those cases, people get scared off. I think the point you made about, like, the fact that it's been 2 years in the cornerback market, three, has not really moved. To me, that is fascinating. I didn't even think about that during this whole thing. You know, what does that really show? Like, what does it show? I don't even know. To me, it shows more than anything that Washington grossly overpaid for Josh Norman, a guy who does not play man-to-man island-type corner in the NFL. That's not what he was. He never did that in Carolina when they
Remember that first game, Antonio Brown, Monday night, the Steelers, and they're like, why? Why is Breshad Breeland covering
Antonio Brown? Exactly right. And I wanted to be like, because this is what Josh Norman's always done. He plays on one side of the football field. The Carolina Panthers, who still run a very similar scheme when Josh Norman's with Carolina, they don't play a ton of man-to-man. They play a little bit more now than they did 3-4 years ago when Josh Norman was there. But, yeah, to me, that is really the flaw of the whole conversation is that he got overpaid. But I am kind of amazed that the market has not gone up more than that over a 3-year period. You know, the guys you talk about being next, like I got to think Jalen Ramsey is going to be the leader in the clubhouse at some point. You know I love William Jackson from the Cincinnati Bengals. I think he's probably another guy that's going to be
up
there.
He'll get tagged by the Bengals. Bengals, yeah. and then he'll leave in free agency.
So it's just going to be interesting to go. But, yeah, I'm amazed at that position to me, too, which has become, I think, very important in the NFL once again. I think there was a few years where we could argue, ooh, I don't know, you know, the way the rules are set up, do we really need awesome shutdown cover corners? Maybe it's better to have safeties like Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas or whatever it may be. But again, I'll go back to New England, what I've talked about, you know, and we talked about this in the show today. It's just you can't play zone coverage all game long. You just can't do it. The quarterbacks, the systems, the receivers, they're too good at throwing and catching this day and age. They're going to find the holes in the zone or where that issue is in the zone altogether to expose it. You got to be able to play man-to-man in some, especially third and five or less type situations. So it's just not, you know, basically 7-on-7 football for the receiver and the quarterback.
Norman's got 5 years, $15 million. Last year, Trumaine Johnson did 5 years, $14.5 million per year
right.
at signing. Stephon Gilmore's contract
yeah.
2 years ago,
right.
$13 million at signing, just $13 million at signing. A.J. Bouye did $13.5 million for 5 years, and Gilmore did $13 million for 5 years. I mean, we think that the Patriots paid market value. It's really not market value.
No,
is it $2 million per year less right. than the Josh Norman deal? I mean, I'd take Gilmore at 13 over Norman at 15.
Not even close. I would take Gilmore in front of, I mean, when you really look at, you know, first thing is New England, they had great knowledge. You've said this many times. They had great knowledge of Stephon Gilmore because they were playing him twice a year at Buffalo. The last year in Buffalo, Stephon Gilmore did not have a great, great year. So I think that kind of lowered his value on the open market a little bit. But New England knew what he was. They saw the size and the speed. And I remember they liked him when he was coming out of the draft. I was working in New England, and he was coming out of South Carolina that year. So I know there was a love affair there. But, I mean, Gilmore, come on. I mean, Desmond Trufant's making more money than him. That's not even close who's better player there. You know, Kyle Fuller. Okay, Kyle Fuller is one of the 10 best corners in
football.
What's
his average per year?
He's at $14 million a year. Patrick Peterson, who's also in that conversation, is $14.01 a year. Xavier Rhodes, he's overpaid at this point. We've heard Mike Zimmer come out and say, gosh, he's got to start playing like a guy that's making $14 million a year. So the corner market's very interesting right now, and especially with guys like we mentioned, Jalen Ramsey, Byron Jones is coming up. There's some young talent that's coming up the ranks at that position.
You've got your top 10 cornerback rankings as of right now. Let's go over them. Who yeah. you got?
All right, so I went Jalen Ramsey 1, Stephon Gilmore 2, Xavier Howard 3, A.J. Bouye 4, William Jackson 5, Byron Jones 6, Kyle Fuller 7, Patrick Peterson 8, Marshawn Lattimore 9, Chris Harris Jr. at number 10.
Lattimore seems high.
I know. You know, Lattimore, the end of the year.
That's a line that could be taken out of context. But, Lattimore seems like he's ranked a little higher on the list than he should be.
Like most of the year last year, he was not as good as he was his rookie year. His rookie year, he was phenomenal. Last year, I would say the first 12, 13 weeks of the year, I was going, man, this is not the guy that I saw last year. But I thought at the end of the year playoffs, he was pretty damn phenomenal. So, I'm going to put him in that category because there's just not a lot of corners in the NFL with his size and speed and length and everything that it goes with it. But, yeah, those would be my top 10 corners.
I feel like the Cowboys are not going to be able to pay one of their many looming free agents.
Right.
Maybe Byron Jones is
maybe
the odd
guy.
Man out.
Yeah.
I mean, is he going to get big money if he gets the open market?
I think
so. Is he a guy that could push $15 million a year higher?
I do. I mean, Byron Jones, again, was a guy that was played out of position a little bit coming out of UConn. They moved him to safety at first, even though he was a corner at UConn. So they moved him to safety. It didn't work out. He goes back to corner and almost instantly shows, oh, my gosh, this guy is like an elite-level athlete. You know, he was a combine freak. And, yeah, I think he is a shutdown island-type corner, as we say, to where, yeah, he should be right in this conversation with being the highest-paid corner in all of football. It's a great position. You're not going to be the king of the mountain forever at that position because – I don't know if there's a place on the field where you need to be more physically elite on a yearly basis than to go. I mean, just imagine what they're asked to do. You know, hey, go see that guy over there, Odell Beckham Jr.? We'd like you to go cover him, man to man.
Figure out where he's going.
Oh, yeah.
And go there.
It's only you only have to cover him for this on this big field that's 53 and a third yards and 100 yards long. Other than that, no problem. He's got to stay inside the white lines, but you got to cover him everywhere else there.
Is it 53 and a third or just 53?
Is it 53? I think it's 53 and a quarter, I think.
I thought it was 53.
I think there's a little extra on there.
and something that we touched on during the show this morning on NBCSN when we did a draft at the top corners right yeah. now, how much it changes.
Right.
Right. Year to year, 2 years, 3 years, it's completely different, which should cause us to respect, as much as I'm not a big Deion Sanders fan, like mm-hmm. the TV guy
yeah.
and the person, but how long was he like the preeminent guy? And he fended off every potential, you know, heir to his throne, where now the turnover is every couple years.
It does. I mean, right now, it seems like every 3, 4, 5 years, yeah, it's a new group of guys that are challenging for the top spot in football. Like, hey, Patrick Peterson's still awesome. I'm not going to sit here and just give him the number one corner in football because he's Patrick Peterson. He's still amazing. But no, yeah, and year, what is it, 8 going in for Patrick Peterson? He's just not on the same level as Jalen Ramsey.
9, actually. It's 9.
So, yeah, not on the same level exactly as some of the younger guys who still have that legit explosion, acceleration. You're going to lose those things as years goes on. But, yeah, Deion Sanders, Darryl Green, you know, Darrell Revis, Champ Bailey. You get into some of those guys, Mike Haynes in the 80s. They're special. They're a different athlete altogether. They are even special for the NFL special. That's how special the cornerback position is. You know, I have this conversation a lot with, like, what is in that? Who's the greatest athletes in the NFL? Is it corners? You know, I don't know. Who is it? What's your definition of an athlete? Because I could show you corners who I go, explosive as hell, best vertical on the team, best 40-yard dash on the team. But, damn, they can't throw. They can't hit a golf ball. They can't dribble a basketball. And then, so is that the best athlete? What's your definition of athlete? You know what I mean,
and it depends on what the sport is that you're playing.
Right, but I mean, even with football, I mean,
unless we're talking about, like, you know.
Who would you say is the best athlete on the football field? If you had to pick one position, would you pick receivers, DBs? Where would you go with?
Maybe a running back. You know, and it's funny, you know, the decathlon was always the way to determine the best athlete in the world.
Right.
Knows? That may have been more hyped than anything else, but you do a bunch of different things.
Right.
I feel like running backs can do a bunch of different things, and I think that running backs now, like, before you become infatuated with being the star player in high school, think about your future. And maybe when you go to college, it's like, I don't want to be the running back.
Jalen Hurd.
Yeah, maybe I can catch passes or play defensive back or play safety. I remember when Ben Tate said, boy, if I had to do it all over again, I'd be a safety, not a running back. And, you know, that athleticism that allows you to get in those car crashes, the problem is you get in those car crashes.
Yeah, right. No,
I always thought a corner is more athletic than a receiver because the corner has to figure out where the receiver's going and go there.
Yeah, no.
The receiver's got the benefit of knowing where he's going.
Right. Well, I hear you. So, yeah, from that, but what is athlete? So what I'm trying to say, too. But, you know, like, the DB can't catch. He can't do anything like sometimes skill-wise, right, where the receiver can do that. The receiver is usually pretty good at shooting baskets and has good hand-eye. Just an interesting conversation.
And it depends on, like, linemen.
Yeah.
What's going to define the best athlete as a lineman is strength.
Yeah.
But I think for the rest of the field, I think ability to change directions quickly is your best attribute. It makes you the best athlete.
Yeah.
Because anybody who can change directions quickly, if you're a defensive back, you can recover.
Right.
If you're a receiver or a running back, you can fake somebody out of his jock and off you go.
That's a fair way to put it.
And if you're a quarterback, if you can throw, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of an athlete you are, if you can throw the ball through a space that big,
exactly.
60 yards down the field on a line.
It'll make up for a lot.
That's what's great about football.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many different skills that come together, so many different body types that come together in that one
game. Well, this was a big argument in the locker room a lot. You know, who are the best athletes in the locker room? Because, and it was usually the DBs and the wide receivers that were having this argument. Because, yeah, the DBs are probably pound for pound a little stronger, and like you're saying, maybe a little bit more explosive that way. But the wide receivers are going to sit there and go, yeah, but none of you can catch a ball, and none of you can throw a baseball or a football, or none of you have a jump shot. So they would be like, well, that's not an athlete then. You're not an athlete. You know, you're just physically gifted. That's what they would say. But you're not an athlete like I am. You know, Odell Beckham Jr.'s of the world and, you know, Julio Jones and those guys are going to be like, well, I could cross you over in a basketball game. And I think you'd see some DBs that would go out there and go, damn, you can't even dribble. I know I played with a few DBs like that where I was like, damn, you're a Hall of Fame defensive back and you can't even dribble a basketball. What the hell's wrong with you? But that's not what he had to do.
All right, I have one more thing I have to do before we wrap this
Another
up.
Another ad?
Yeah, man.
I'm not getting paid for
you
this.
Do you get a check?
No.
You don't get a check?
From NBC.
Well, then shut up. All right. There are three things every homeowner wants their home to be: smarter, safer, and more fun. What if I told you, Chris, that OneLink by First Alert has you covered? First, meet your family's new best friend, the OneLink Safe and Sound. It's a hardwired smart smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a premium home speaker, and it's Alexa-enabled. It's all in one sleek device. It's built with First Alert safety technology that provides an immersive, great sound experience. The safe and sound elevates any home, but it gets even better. OneLink by First Alert also offers a smart smoke and carbon monoxide alarm that works with the OneLink Safe and Sound. The device is easy to install. It protects against both smoke and carbon monoxide. So if smoke or carbon monoxide are detected in your home, the smart alarm will notify you via exclusive voice and location technology. Send a notification to your smartphone, whether you're home or not. A smartphone and smart home should start with smart protection, and OneLink by First Alert welcomes you to a smarter, safer home. Visit onelink.firstalink. Let me try that again. Visit onelink.firstalert.com for more information. That's onelink.firstalert.com for more information.
Today, Junior.
Onelink.firstalert.com.
That sounds like a good idea, actually. I'm thinking in my brain, I have an alarm system that's like that. I wonder if it's the same company. I'll have to ask my wife. But either way, if you don't have
it's
that
not,
one,
it should be.
That's a good setup.
How does your alarm system determine the desirable smoke from the undesirable smoke?
It doesn't. Daddy goes on the back patio. That's why we call it Daddy Cigars on the back porch.
What do you do when it's cold?
Oh, it's torture sometimes. I sometimes bundle up. But then if it's really cold and I'm like, damn, I just don't feel like sitting out here and on a Friday night at 20 degrees to smoke my daddy's cigars, I will go in the garage and stay there until it gets to the very
literal
end.
Hot box.
Literally hot box in my own garage. And then, you know, at the very end, open up the garage, let all the smoke out, let it clear out for a few minutes, and then come back downstairs and shut it back up.
I know the Friday night before we went to Atlanta for the Super Bowl, yeah, I was going to be gone all week, and yeah, I smoke a couple cigars a week, just regular cigars,
yeah,
not daddy cigars.
Yeah.
But and it was, it's like I was like a little 15-minute smoke, and I just wanted to go outside. It was like 20 degrees. It's like, all right, I'll get my gloves, I'll get my coat, I put a little fire, I got a fireplace right outside,
right.
And it's like, this is miserable. It's yeah. not worth yeah. it. So
if you hit a certain temperature where you're just like, I can't do this,
but
this is not fun.
You hit a certain temperature where you want to do it every night.
Oh.
Where this is just, like the last Tuesday night when I was at home, it was perfect.
Right. You yeah. want to go outside, you just feel like, I'm supposed to yeah. be out here.
Nice, clean, fresh air.
Right.
Let me inhale this nasty tobacco into my body.
Yeah, it's all right. We can't be perfect.
Well, it's only two a week, right?
Yeah.
That's how I justify it.
Yeah.
It's only two a week.
Right.
Until it's three a week in the summertime.
Yeah.
It's only three a week.
Yeah.
Until it's four
yeah,
a week.
Good, good.
All right. Aaron Rodgers had a cameo on Game of Thrones last night, which you saw the scene.
I saw the scene and didn't see Aaron Rodgers. But there he is. Looking good.
What was he? Do we know? I don't watch the show.
He was a scared villager, apparently, that because the I don't know.
Did
what
he die? Did he die?
I think he might have. I think he might have, right. But it was like dragons flying around, and they were blowing stuff up with their fire coming out of their mouth. So.
Well, yeah, you're not supposed to. I don't know. You know, if anybody, I don't know.
So, I mean, dragons flying around with fire out of their mouth, is that anything new?
I think that's
the show?
Like every episode.
Yeah,
dragon flies around and breathes fire.
You. I've only turned on, I mean, I'm telling you, only three things happen on that show, even though I know it's a phenomenon.
What do you watch on TV?
Sports.
Other than sports, what shows do you watch?
Gosh, I'm really horrible. Like I
know you're really horrible. That's another one we can, that'll be a perfect drop for PFT.
I mean,
Live.
I'm still like.
I agree, you're very horrible.
Seinfeld reruns still. There's a show, that's on Netflix, and I'm blanking out on the Handmaid's Tale. Thank
it's not
you,
on Netflix.
Pete. I know. Is that Hulu?
Hulu.
That's Hulu.
Is it Hulu?
I don't know.
Or
it's
Amazon.
One of them. Either way. But that's one that my wife has gotten me into that I've only... But I'm going to start back at Game of Thrones. But other than that, I mean, then I'm just like... I watched the basketball yesterday. I watched both games, pretty much all the way through. I just find myself... More times than not, even when it's not football or basketball season, I'm going to turn the Yankees on at night and watch some baseball. So
you never feel like you just have to get away from sports just for a little break.
I
feel that way sometimes.
I hear you, but no, I find myself more times than not still sitting on the couch going, let me see what's on. It's the best form of reality TV for me.
It's amazing though. I'll watch Seinfeld just like as I'm working, background noise on Hulu, just play one after another. It's
yeah.
just there.
I know.
It's
the greatest.
I find myself far too often, like with a cable news channel on, And you get yourself all twisted up about what's going on in the world. It's nice to get away from that, too.
Yeah, I agree. It's only so
especially
much
when it comes to global warming.
Well, there's only so much of the news I can take, right? Oh, well, I made a few comments on social media about global warming this week.
Oh, you made a few comments on the show about global warming.
And people,
I got a bunch of emails. Yeah,
that's
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I got 75 emails over 3 days complaining about Chris Sims.
The people who are still living under the rock that don't want to listen to the scientists over the world that say it's real, but yes, they know better. At sitting at home on their couch. They've done the studies.
Give me the best NFL player TV show cameo that you could think of.
Gosh. I always thought Terry Bradshaw showing his ass in that movie with Matthew McConaughey.
What movie
I can't
was
think
that?
Of
Failure
it.
To Launch.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Failure to Launch? Yeah. Like he could never find a girlfriend that really would
I'm
go
talking
with
about one that. Are we talking about. No, I think we're saying going forward, not what you would want.
Oh, I don't
you
know.
Want to see Terry Bradshaw's ass?
I don't give a damn about this topic. Sure.
We've been talking about
what the hell Downtown Abbey is. It sounds like some English show that was on PBS. I think that's what Downtown Abbey
is. Like 10 years ago.
Yes, right. I remember my mom.
I think it's coming back. I saw something in here. It's coming back.
Right.
Is it coming back? Is it like on NBC? I guess okay.
Okay, so it's a good deal. You got one in mind?
We've got. Well, it's not a cameo. We've been arguing for Gronk to be the star of the reboot of The Terminator.
Yes,
because it was 14 lines.
Right,
they're all like four words each, like "Hello, I'll be back."
Right.
Well, you know, whatever.
He talks like that already. He's already like "Dom, throw me ball."
No, I really do think when he was on the Billboard Music Awards, his acting was much better than I've seen it before. But his acting when I've seen it before was god awful, just horrible. He actually was like, you know.
Yes.
I don't know.
He was serviceable?
Almost serviceable.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of like us.
Well, I'm sure they were saying that about Arnold when he was getting done at the gym, too.
Tell me about the basketball. James Harden and Chris Paul. I don't watch it. So what happened to James Harden and Chris Paul?
Well, no, they just lost again to the Golden State Warriors.
That's Houston. The Houston Rockets.
Houston Rockets, right. I mean, once again, the Golden State's king of the West, Kevin Durant, ruined basketball. And they showed that they didn't need him. They win game six on the road without Kevin Durant. Steph Curry goes off in the second half. I'm so mad at Kevin Durant. I just can't even take it.
Why are you mad at him?
Because he went to a team that was 73-9. I mean, it was the
great. Wait a minute. Don't we support free choice and capitalism and do what you want to do?
Yeah, go somewhere else where they don't need you. They were good enough already without you. He's ruined the competitive spirit. And I know people are going to go, well, you know, other players of LeBron went to Miami. Yeah, they were like the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference that year. They limped into the playoffs and like Dwayne Wade was playing half the season at the time. And he brought another guy that was not on the team and started their own new team. It's different than Golden State, who had already won two championships. And in their third season was 73-9. And then they lost to the Cavaliers and LeBron, and they were like, oh, gosh, Kevin Durant, come here and save us. We lost. We don't know if we can beat LeBron. And it pisses me off because I like basketball, and they've ruined the balance of it.
How many championships have the Warriors won?
Since
Steph became.
They're 3 and 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. 3 and 4 years. Is two with Durant?
We were trying to think of a comparable to the Houston Rockets, like this chronic success or failure to succeed in the postseason. I remember the Rams in the 70s were like that perennial lose to the Cowboys, lose to the Vikings, never make it to the Super Bowl. They finally made it at the end of the decade and they lost to the Steelers.
Yeah.
But there was that just throughout the 70s, they always ran into somebody in the NFC that would keep them from getting to the Super Bowl, but they were always a really good team. And I don't know how comparable it is. It's not like, you know, star players are different in the NFL, especially in the 70s, than star basketball players because there's only five guys on the field.
Right.
Or court, or whatever it's called.
Yes.
Court? Is it court?
It's a court.
Field?
Yes, it's a court. Thank you. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Are there players that live up to that billing right now where they just can't get it done? You know? You know, I guess Andy Reid's in that category. I thought of Antonio Brown. You know, ever since he got to Pittsburgh, they haven't been able to get to a Super Bowl.
They got to one when he was a rookie, but he didn't have anything to do
so
with
it. So he was on that team that lost to Pittsburgh.
Lost to Green Bay.
But I don't know. Does anybody jump out to you as that team that you go, oh, they're always right there but can't seem to get it done?
The Vikings for the last 50 years.
Well, yeah, I knew you'd go back to the Vikings at some point.
Well, isn't it obvious?
No, I guess.
Super Bowl wins and four chances. The Bills, I mean, but the Bills. The thing is, the Bills went 20 years without even getting to the playoffs.
Yeah, no. And
the Vikings still accidentally trip into the postseason.
I was trying to think of somebody recent, but I don't know if there's anybody really recent right now that jumps out to me other than Andy Reid, really. That's the one.
Well, yeah, Philip Rivers.
They're standing in the back. Yeah, I get it. I mean, gosh, I feel bad for Phillip Rivers. The only real teams he was on, you know, they dropped an interception to beat Brady or fumbled the interception. And then the next year he got to play in the AFC Championship and had a torn ACL. So it's that's tough there either way. But, yeah, Chris Paul, I don't understand sometimes the love affair with him at the point guard position. People talk about him like he's the greatest thing ever, and I just don't see it.
All I remember about Chris Paul is when he was at Wake Forest, West Virginia beat him, and I think it was his last college game.
Yeah.
In the NCAA tournament. That's all I know about Chris Paul.
And what did he do?
In that game. I don't know. He left.
Oh, okay.
He didn't. West Virginia won.
Oh, I thought there was something that happened.
West Virginia won. Right. See you later.
See ya.
Suck it, Chris Paul.
See you, Chris Paul.
How do you finish this thing? Do you, like, sing a song? Or?
No. We're not singing O'Reilly parts or First Alarm or anything like that. First Alarm have a song we're supposed to sing?
No. Kenyon Drake tomorrow.
Kenyon Drake is tomorrow. That'll be cool. I met Kenyon Drake and went down to the Boys and Girls Club in Miami, which was awesome because, first of all, you know, hey, that's the Miami Miracle Man and Kenyon Drake. But he does this great deed of being involved with the kids down in Miami, tells nobody about it. We kind of found out through some back channels, and we showed him some love for it. Great dude. Got a chance for a big year down there as far as being in that New England offense. So hopefully people will, like, listen to that a little
bit. Thanks for letting me hang out on your new desk.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have a feeling the new desk isn't going to be here.
Oh, the new desk is great.
No, I don't like the new desk. Great. I like the couch.
You like the couch better?
I like the couch.
Yeah, you have absolutely no
Actually,
say in this matter.
The thing, though, is when you're on the couch, you never quite know, like, how do I sit?
Exactly.
How do I cross my legs?
Right. Where do I hold the computer?
Do I do the side? Do I do this?
Right, yeah. So the table's better, then, is what you're saying.
I guess the table's better.
Okay, thank you very much.
I wanted to say I don't like the table because I know that you're
Yeah, it's my idea.
Table.
All right, there's PFTPM.
I think the table contributes to global warming.
Oh, you think it does? No, you know what contributes to global warming? Is that we had to waste paper on that stupid-ass book you wrote down there, okay? Quarterback of the future. You chopped down trees for that crap right there?
That's how the publishing industry works.
Okay. All right.
As you walk around with this.
I know.
Right? He has this, folks, that he could put all of his notes on. Instead, he insists.
Next year it's happening.
It's 1962, and he carries this thing around. At least, my God, how do you even read that? You're like a stenographer.
It's happening next year.
All right, we got to go.
PFTPM.
Bye.
Chris Simms, the button. Peace. We're out of here.